Chapter 43. Bobby. They were all missing something. It was like someone knocking at the back of her mind, demanding to be let in. Bobby went over it in her head. Sure, that prick Nguyen showed every sign he was willing to kill the Rocinante, ranking UN politician on board or not. Avasarala had made a gamble that her presence would back the UN ships off. It seemed she was about to lose that bet. There were still 6 UN destroyers bearing down on them. But there were 6 more ships tailing them. Including, as she'd just pointed out to Holden, 2 Raptor-class fast-attack cruisers. Top-of-the-line Martian military hardware and more than a match for any UN destroyer. Along with the 2 cruisers were 4 Martian destroyers. They might or might not be better than their UN counterparts, but with the 2 cruisers in their wing, they had a significant tonnage and firepower advantage. And they were following the UN ships to see that they weren't about to do something to escalate the shooting war. Like killing the one UN politician who wasn't straining at the leash for a war with Mars. "Hey, you know," Bobby said before she realized she was going to say anything, "I just had an idea." The galley fell silent. Bobby had a sudden and uncomfortable memory of speaking up in the UN conference room and wrecking her military career in the process. Captain Holden, the cute one who was a little too full of himself, was staring at her, a not particularly flattering gape on his face. He looked like a very angry person who'd lost his train of thought mid-rant. And Avasarala was staring at her, too. Though, having learned to read the old lady's expression better, she didn't see anger there, just curiosity. "Well," Bobby said, clearing her throat, "there are 6 Martian ships following those UN ships, and the Martian ships outclass them. Both navies are at high alert." No one moved or spoke. Avasarala's curiosity had turned to a frown. "So," Bobby continued, "they might be willing to back us up." Avasarala's frown had only gotten deeper. "Why," she said, "would the Martians give a fuck about protecting me from being killed by my own damn navy?" "Would it hurt to ask?" "No," Holden said. "I'm thinking no. Is everyone else here thinking it wouldn't hurt?" "Who'd make the call?" Avasarala asked. "You? The traitor?" The words were like a gut punch, but Bobby realized what the old lady was doing. She was hitting Bobby with the worst possible Martian response, gauging her reaction to it. "Yeah, I'd open the door," Bobby said, "but you're the one that will have to convince them." Avasarala stared at her for a very long minute, then said, "Okay." "Repeat that, Rocinante," the Martian commander said. The connection was as clear as if they were standing in the room with the man. It wasn't the sound quality that was throwing him. Avasarala spoke slowly, enunciating carefully all the same. "This is Assistant Undersecretary Christian Avasarala of the United Nations of Earth," Avasarala said again. "I am about to be attacked by a rogue element of the UN Navy while I'm on my way to a peacekeeping mission in the Jupiter system. Fucking save me. I will reward you by talking my government out of glassing your planet."
"I'm going to have to send this up the chain," the commander said. They weren't using a video link, but the grin was audible in his voice.
"Call whoever you need to call," Avasarala said. "Just make a decision before these cunts start raining missiles down on me, all right?"
"I'll do my best, ma'am."
The skinny one, her name was Naomi, killed the connection and swiveled to look at Bobby.
"Why would they help us again?"
"Mars doesn't want a war," Bobby replied, hoping she wasn't talking completely out of her ass. "If they find out that the UN's voice of reason is on a ship that's about to be killed by rogue UN warhawks, it only makes sense for them to step in."
"Kind of sounds like you're talking out of your ass there," Naomi said.
"Also," Avasarala said,
I just gave them permission to shoot at the UN Navy without political repercussions.
Even if they help, Holden said, there's no way they can completely stop the UN ships from taking some shots at us. We'll need an engagement plan.
We just got this damn thing put back together, Amos said.
I still say we stick Prax and Naomi on the Razorback, Holden said.
I'm starting to think that's a bad idea, Avasarala said. She took a sip of coffee and grimaced. The old lady was definitely missing her 5 cups of tea a day.
Explain, Holden said.
Well, if the Martians decide they're on our side, that changes the whole landscape for those UN ships. They can't beat all 7 of us, if I understand the math right.
Okay, Holden said.
That makes it in their interest not to be called a rogue element in the history books. If Nguyen's cabal fails, everyone on his team gets at minimum a court-martial. The best way to make sure that doesn't happen is to make sure I don't survive this fight, no matter who wins.
Which means they'll be shooting at the Rossi, Naomi said. Not the pinnace.
Of course not, Avasarala said with a laugh. Because of course I'll be on the pinnace. You think for a second they'll believe that you're desperately trying to protect an escaped craft that I'm not on? And I bet the Razorback doesn't have those PDCs you were talking about, does it?
To Bobby's surprise, Holden was nodding as Avasarala spoke. She'd sort of pegged him as a know-it-all who fell in love only with his own ideas.
Yeah, Holden said. You're absolutely right. They'll fling everything they've got at the Razorback as she tries to get away, and she'll have no defense.
Which means we all live, or we all die, right here on this ship, Naomi said with a sigh. As usual.
So, again, Holden said, we need an engagement plan.
This is a pretty thin crew, Bobby said, now that the conversation had moved back to her area of expertise. Where's everyone usually sit?
Operations officer, Holden said, pointing at Naomi. She also does electronic warfare and countermeasures. And she's a savant, considering she'd never worked it before we got this ship.
Mechanic? Holden started, pointing at Amos.
Grease monkey, Amos said, cutting him off.
I do my best to keep the ship from falling apart when there's holes in it.
I usually man the combat ops board, Holden said.
Who's the gunner? Bobby asked.
Yo, said Alex, pointing at himself.
You fly and do target acquisition? Bobby said.
I'm impressed.
Alex's already dark skin grew a shade darker. His aw shucks Mariner Valley drawl had started to go from annoying to charming, and the blush was sweet.
Oh, no. The captain does acquisition from combat ops generally, but I have to manage fire control.
Well, there you go, Bobby said, turning to Holden. Give me weps.
No offense, Sergeant, Holden said.
Gunny, Bobby replied.
Gunny, Holden agreed with a nod.
But are you qualified to operate fire control on a naval vessel?
Bobby decided not to be offended and grinned at him instead.
I saw your armor and the weapons you were carrying in the airlock.
You found a map in the cargo bay, right?
Map? Avasarala asked.
Mobile assault package. Marine assault gear. Not as good as my force recon armor, but full kit for a half a dozen ground pounders.
Yeah, Holden said. That's where we got it.
That's because this is a multi-role fast attack ship. Torpedo bomber is just one of them. Boarding party insertion is another. And gunnery sergeant is a rank with a very specific meaning.
Yeah, Alex said. Equipment specialist.
I'm required to be proficient in all of the weapon systems my platoon or company might need to operate during a typical deployment, including the weapon systems on an assault boat like this.
I see, Holden started, but Bobby cut him off with a nod.
I'm your gunner. Like most things in Bobby's life, the weapons officer's chair had been made for someone smaller than her. The 5-point harness was digging into her hips and her shoulders.
Even at its farthest setting, the fire control console was just a bit too close for her to comfortably rest her arms on the crash couch while using it. All of which would be a problem if they had to do any really high-G maneuvering. Which, of course, they would once the fight started. She tucked her elbows in as close as she could to keep her arms from wrenching out of their sockets at high G, and fidgeted with the harness. It would have to be good enough. From his seat behind and above her, Alex said,
"This'll be over quick one way or the other. You probably won't have time to get too uncomfortable."
"That's reassuring."
Over the 1MC, Holden said,
"We're inside the maximum effective weapon range now. They could fire immediately or 20 hours from now, so stay belted in. Only leave your station in life-threatening emergency and at my direct order. I hope everyone got their catheter on right."
"Mine's too tight," Amos said.
Alex spoke behind her, and it was echoed a split second later over the comm channel.
"It's a condom catheter, partner. It goes on the outside."
Bobby couldn't help laughing and held one hand up behind her until Alex slapped it. Holden said,
"We have greens across the board down here in ops. Everyone check in with go, no-go status."
"All green at flight control," Alex said.
"Green at electronic warfare," Naomi said.
"We'll go down here," Amos said.
"Weapons are green and hot," Bobby said last. Even strapped into a chair two sizes too small for her, on a stolen Martian warship, captained by one of the most wanted men in the inner planets, it felt really goddamn good to be there. Bobby restrained a whoop of joy and instead pulled Holden's threat display up. He'd already marked the 6 pursuing UN destroyers. Bobby tagged the lead ship and let the Rosinante try to come up with a target solution on it. The Rosi calculated the odds of a hit at less than 0.1%. She jumped from target to target, getting a feel for the response times and controls. She tapped a button to pull up target info and looked over the UN destroyer specs. When reading ship specs bored her, she pulled out to the tactical view. One tiny green dot pursued by 6 slightly larger red dots, which were in turn pursued by 6 blue dots. That was wrong. The Earth ships should be blue, and the Martians red. She told the Rosi to swap the color scheme. The Rosinante was oriented toward the pursuing ships. On the map, it looked like they were flying directly at each other. But in reality, the Rosinante was in the middle of a deceleration burn, slowing down to let the UN ships catch up faster. All 13 of the ships in this particular engagement were hurtling sunward. The Rosi was just doing it ass first. Bobby glanced at the time and saw that her noodling with the controls had burned less than 15 minutes. "I hate waiting for a fight."
"You and me both, sister," Alex said.
"Got any games on this thing?" Bobby asked, tapping on her console.
"I spy with my little eye," Alex replied, "something that begins with D."
"Destroyer," Bobby said. 6 tubes, 8 PDCs, and a keel-mounted rapid-fire railgun."
"Good guess. Your turn."
"I fucking hate waiting for a fight."
When the battle began, it began all at once. Bobby had expected some early probing shots. A few torpedoes fired from extreme range, just to see if the crew of the Rosinante had full control of all the weapon systems and everything was in working order. Instead, the UN ships had closed the distance, the Rosi slamming on the brakes to meet them. Bobby watched the 6 UN ships creep closer and closer to the red line on her threat display. The red line that represented the point at which a full salvo from all 6 ships would overwhelm the Rosi's point defense network. Meanwhile, the 6 Martian ships moved closer to the green line on her display, that represented their optimal firing range to engage the UN ships. It was a big game of chicken, and everyone was waiting to see who would flinch first. Alex was juggling their deceleration thrust to try to make sure the Martians got in range before the Earthers did. When the shooting started, He would put the throttle down and try to move through the active combat zone as quickly as possible. It was why they were going to meet the UN ships in the first place. Running away would just have kept them in range a lot longer. Then, one of the red dots, a Martian fast attack cruiser, crossed the green line, and alarms started going off all over the ship. "Fast movers," Naomi said. "The Martian cruiser has fired 8 torpedoes." Bobby could see them. Tiny yellow dots shifting to orange as they took off at high G. The UN ships immediately responded. Half of them spun around to face the pursuing Martian ships and opened up with their rail guns and point defense cannons. The space on the tactical display between the two groups was suddenly filled with yellow-orange dots. "Incoming," Naomi yelled. 6 torpedoes on a collision course." Half a second later, the torpedo's vector and speed information popped up on Bobby's PDC control display. Holden had been right. The skinny belter was good at this. Her reaction times were astonishing. Bobby flagged all 6 torpedoes for the PDCs, and the ship began to vibrate as they fired in rapid staccato. "Juice coming," Alex said, and Bobby felt her couch prick her in half a dozen places. Cold pumped into her veins, quickly becoming white hot. She shook her head to clear the threatening tunnel vision while Alex said, 3, 2. He never said 1. The Rosinante smashed into Bobby from behind, crushing her into her crash couch. She remembered at the last second to keep her elbows lined up and avoided having her arms broken as every part of her tried to fly backward at 10 gravities. On her threat display, the initial wave of 6 torpedoes fired at them winked out one by one as the Rossi tracked and shot them down. More torpedoes were in the air, but now the entire Martian wing had opened up on the Earthers, and the space around the ships had become a confusion of drive tails and detonations. Bobby told the Rossi to target anything on an approach vector and shoot at it with the point defenses, leaving it up to Martian engineering and the universe's good graces. She switched one of the big displays to the forward cameras, turning it into a window on the battle. Ahead of her, the sky was filled with bright, white flashes of light and expanding clouds of gas as torpedoes detonated. The UN ships had decided that the Martians were the real threat, and all 6 of them had spun to face the enemy ships head-on. Bobby tapped a control to throw a threat overlay onto the video image, and suddenly the sky was full of impossibly fast blobs of light as the threat computer put a glowing outline on every torpedo and projectile. The Rosinante was coming up fast on the UN destroyers, and the thrust dropped to 2G.
"Here we go," Alex said.
Bobby pulled up the torpedo targeting system and targeted the drive cones of 2 of the ships.
2 away, she said, releasing her first 2 fish into the water. Bright drive tails lit the sky as they streaked off. The ready-to-fire indicator went red as the ship reloaded the tubes. Bobby was already selecting the drive cones for the next 2 UN ships. The instant the ready indicator went green, she fired them both. She targeted the last 2 destroyers, then checked on the progress of her first 2 torpedoes. They were both gone, shot down by the destroyer's aft PDCs. A wave of fast-moving blobs of light hurtled toward them, and Alex threw the ship sideways, dancing out of the line of fire. It wasn't enough. A yellow atmosphere warning light began rotating in the cockpit, and a ditone klaxon sounded.
"We're hit," Holden said, his voice calm. "Dumping the atmosphere. Hope everyone has their hat on tight."
As Holden shut down the air system, the sounds of the ship faded until Bobby could hear only her own breathing and the faint hiss of the 1MC channel on her headset.
"Wow," Amos said over the comm. 3 hits, small projectiles, probably PDC rounds, managed to go right through us without hitting anything that mattered."
"It went through my room," the scientist Prax said.
"Bet that woke you up," Amos said, his voice a grin.
"I soiled myself," Prax replied without a hint of humor. Quiet, Holden said, but there was no malice in it. Stay off the channel, please. Bobby let the rational, thinking part of her mind listen to the back and forth. She had no use for that part of her brain right now. The part of her mind that had been trained to acquire targets and fire torpedoes at them worked without her interference. The lizard was driving now. She didn't know how many torpedoes she'd fired. When there was an enormous flash of light and the camera display blacked out for a second. When it came back, one of the UN destroyers was torn in two, the rapidly separating pieces of hull spinning away from each other, trailing a faint gas cloud and small bits of jetsam. Some of those things flying out of the shattered ship would be UN sailors. Bobby ignored that. The lizard rejoiced. The destruction of the first UN ship tipped the scales, and within minutes the other five were heavily damaged or destroyed. A UN captain sent out a distress call and immediately signaled surrender. Bobby looked at her display. Three UN ships destroyed, three heavily damaged. The Martians had lost two destroyers, and one of their cruisers was badly damaged. The Rocinante had three bullet wounds that had let all her air out, but no other damage. They'd won.
Holy shit, Alex said. Captain, we have got to get one of these.
It took Bobby a minute to realize he was talking about her. You have the gratitude of the UN government, Avasarla was saying to the Martian commander, or at least the part of the UN government I run. We're going to Io to blow up some more ships and maybe stop the apocalypse. Want to come with? Bobby opened a private channel to Avasarala. We're all traitors now.
Ha! The old lady said. Only if we lose.